Paris, he said, I'm going to go out and see if I can score some beans. Then he pretended to remember he had no car. He got that sort of expression. Luckman, he said, is your Falcon running? No, Luckman said thoughtfully after consideration. I don't think so. Can I borrow your car, Jim? Arctor asked Barris.
I wonder if you can handle my car, Barris said.
This always arose as a defense when anyone tried to borrow Barris's car, because Barris had had secret, unspecified modifications done on it. In its A, suspension, B, engine, C, transmission, D, rear end, E, drivetrain, F, electrical system, G, front end and steering, H, as well as clock, cigar lighter, ashtray, glove compartment. In particular, the glove compartment. Barris kept it locked always. The radio, too, had been cunningly changed, never explained how or why. If you tuned one station, you got only 1 minute apart blips. All the push buttons brought in a single transmission that made no sense, and oddly, there was never any rock played over it. Sometimes when they were accompanying Barris on a buy and Barris parked and got out of the car, leaving them, he turned the particular station on in a special fashion, very loud. If they changed it while he was gone, he became incoherent and refused to speak on the trip back or ever to explain. He had not explained yet. Probably when set to that frequency, his radio transmitted A, to the authorities, B, to a private paramilitary political organization, C, to the syndicate, D, to extraterrestrials of higher intelligence.
By that, I mean, Barris said, it will cruise at...
Ah, fuck, Luckman broke in harshly. It's an ordinary six-cylinder motor, you humper. When we park in it, downtown L.A., the parking lot jockey drives it. So why can't Bob? Ah, you asshole.
Now, Bob Arctor had a few devices, too, a few covert modifications built into his own car radio, but he didn't talk about them. Well, actually, it was Fred who had, or anyhow, somebody had, and they did a few things a little like what Barris claimed his several electronic assists did, and then, on the other hand, they did not. For example, every law enforcement vehicle emits a particular full-spectrum interference, which sounds on ordinary car radios like a failure in the spark suppressors of that vehicle, as if the police car's ignition is faulty. However, Bob Arctor, as a peace officer, had been allocated a gadget which, when he mounted it within his car radio, told him a great deal, whereas the noises told other people, and most other people, no information at all. These other people did not even recognize the static as information-bearing. First of all, the different subsounds told Bob Arctor how close the law enforcement vehicle was to his own, and next, what variety of department it represented, city or county, highway patrol or federal, whatever. He, too, picked up the one-minute-apart blips, which acted as a time check for a parked vehicle. Those in the parked vehicle could determine how many minutes they had waited without any obvious arm gestures. This was useful, for instance, when they had agreed to hit a house in exactly 3 minutes. The zzz, zzz, zzz on their car radio told them precisely when 3 minutes had passed. He knew, too, about the AM station that played the top 10 type tunes on and on, plus an enormous amount of DJ chatter in between, which sometimes was not chatter, in a sense. If that station had been tuned to, and the racket of it filled your car, anyone casually overhearing it would hear a conventional pop music station and typical boring DJ talk, and either not hang around at all or flash on in any way to the fact that the so-called DJ suddenly, in exactly the same muted chatty style of voice in which he said, "Now, here's a number for Phil and Jane, a new Cat Stevens tune called," occasionally said something more like, "Vehicle Blue will proceed a mile north to Bastoncherry, and the other units will," and so on.